Well, I guess I'd like you to talk about your how you go into engineering and why you came here and what your impressions were when you came, but also what you think of as the issues over the years in engineering that it would be interesting to explore. And then if there's more to be said at another time, we can get more into your... Were you both in industrial engineering?
No, mechanical. I'm industrial.
But aren't you doing... You're not doing anything with industrial.
Manufacturing, sort of half and half, cross-breeding, industrial, mechanical, and electrical.
Well, and there may be some confusion. Dean Bollinger does a lot of work with industry in industrial consortia. So I don't know if you had any question what we were talking about. It may not be strictly industrial engineering, but it is very much industrially oriented.
Well, I think one of the major issues in engineering is, at least as far as the rest of the campus may be concerned, or at least Harrington spoke of this, is why engineering hadn't done more with industry in the state.
Okay, that's...
And he had an explanation of this.
But did, sure, he? Did he have an explanation?
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to hear it.
All right. He said that because Wharf had given so much money to chemical engineering and then generally built to the life sciences part of the campus, that chemical engineering was able to go way ahead, but chemical engineer graduates went off to the east and got jobs in New Jersey and therefore didn't share their know-how with the state, and that the other departments, not having gotten this kind of money, weren't able to do as much as they might have done otherwise. That's...
Maybe plausible, but I don't think chemical engineering was that well endowed over the years. I don't have any facts, but today we definitely had a very distinguished faculty in chemical engineering.
Mm-hmm.
And they, in fact, did a lot of work with industry, full of housing and beer
here
making business in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some facts that would sort of tone that down to say, well, if anybody 25 years ago was active with industry in Wisconsin, it was our chemical engineering department, much more than some of the others.
Yeah.
Electrical was small, and mechanical had some very active people with industry. But I think, frankly, there's a much more fundamental answer to that question, and that is that because of the nature of the land grant school and the opportunity, particularly in agriculture, to establish a far-reaching system of extension in county agents, there was far more natural interrelations developing. They were helping the small guy, the little businessman, do things that there was no other collective resource to help. On the other hand, Wisconsin industrially was based essentially in along the coast of Lake Michigan. It was heavy industry. It was very profitable. And it was managed conservatively.
Mm-hmm.
There was little interest on the part of the industrialists in the 30s and 40s, or even before, particularly before, to support a university. Milwaukee industry was built from the turn of the century on imported technicians from Germany.
Hmm.
And secondly, there was a natural competition, and that is still alive today, between the Milwaukee business community and the Madison political community. I see it in hearings I sit in. It's very vivid. when people start talking about where should we build a research park, and you know, it invariably comes out that the best compromise would be halfway between here and Milwaukee. You know. So I think from a geographic, political, and business point of view, it was virtually impossible for my predecessors to create any kind of, an active extension program. Then, when extension did get started in technology, it was started separate from the College of Engineering, and has remained so since.
As part of general engineering,
no,
I mean
as
general
part of
extension.
Yeah. Right. So while we interacted well with them for many years, there was a long and continuous growing separation between the extension. There was a separation in tenure. They developed their own faculty, graduate engineers, and we developed ours. And there are two groups that at best talk together once in a while, and they come and ask us to participate when we have people that are more well-known in technology than they do. So there's cooperation, but it is it's really two separate operations. So we don't get any visibility in the state from extension services versus agriculture, which gets all the exposure from extension. So I think that's another current problem. And the systemization of the university made things even worse for engineering, because in the 60s, our faculty managed a graduate program in Milwaukee. It was part of my regular teaching plan to spend one semester a year teaching my graduate course at night in Milwaukee. And I met with Milwaukee people, and it was a marvelous experience because these were different kind of students.
Mm-hmm.
When we started the engineering program in the Milwaukee campus and the advanced degree programs, and this thing became systemized, everything got split up, and that sequence of events destroyed practically all of our educational interrelationship with the Milwaukee campus. So that further separated us from the major portion of the industrial complex of Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And it isn't until now that I'd say if there's anything that revives our visibility in the state, and particularly in Milwaukee, it's the trend to high technology.
Mm-hmm.
We were the guys over in the political seat who were spending all our time on Cloud 9 doing advanced research and thinking about all these things that were way out, weren't of interest to people. And now we're the best looking girl on the block, because we've got the people, if you want to talk about thin film technology, you know, real important in material utilization, we've got the people to do that. Only ones in the state. If you talk microelectronics, we've only got the only facility in the state. If you talk about fusion energy, we've got the facility. You talk about manufacturing engineering at advanced levels, we've got the capability. So
robotics.
Suddenly, all these hot topics that are coming up in the press, oh my heavens, you mean there's something going on in the College of Engineering in Madison? And the answer is absolutely. You know? And we're famous around the world more than we are in the state of Wisconsin. In many areas.
And does industry use these sorts of things?
Well, they're beginning
heavy industry?
To. They're beginning to.
In the past, they haven't felt that they were successful at doing what they did. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons they're having problems now.
Yeah.
And they saw no need to change.
Uh-huh.
And now they're seeing a need to change, and now, as Dean Bollinger pointed out, they're turning to the college. But I think you're being a little modest, John. When did you begin your A.O. Smith research?
1963.
So that's 19 years ago. And you had some pretty significant research projects with them.
Well, yeah, they were
aware.
That didn't help the university to get much visibility, because they didn't. I think in the whole 20 years I've dealt with A.O. Smith, they've really not cared about recognizing the university. They were over here to find individuals that could contribute to the technology. It wasn't the visibility of the university, it was the visibility of a specialist in an area that they could draw upon. And today we're talking more than we did in those days about the visibility. But remember, that was the same time as we started UIR.
Yeah.
Prior to 63, there wasn't any university industry research program. And I met the people at A.L. Smith as a result of the fact that I was, when I came back from Germany in 63, Jerry Rolick, who was the new director of UIR, said, hey, wouldn't you like to be associate director and work with me for a couple of years and get to know industry in the state? So that was really the beginning of engineering, getting involved with industry. So I said, sure, that sounds exciting. I'd just been to Germany and had spent a year and a half in a research institute that worked almost exclusively with industry.
This was a research lead, was it?
Yeah, I had a Fulbright. I went to Germany. And I was at the Technical Institute in Aachen for manufacturing technology and machine tools. And when I came back, I had all kinds of ideas on, because I'd seen how they worked with industry. So Jerry asked me to do that. And it was a meeting set up with A.L. Smith and the university, talking about what research was going on in the university, that I met somebody from A.L. Smith and got talking about welding, and that led to some projects. So it was a result. My association there was a result of really the first major attempt on the part of the Madison campus to communicate to industry what we were doing here as a university.
Do you know how that started? The university? Yes.
I don't remember whose idea it was. I just remember that the dean of the grad school decided to do it. You know, who?
Is that, when, what year was it?
It was in 63.
Is that Alberti?
Alberti, I think.
Must have been Alberti.
I think it was Alberti. And he and others must have decided this was a good idea. And Jerry Rolick was probably, at the time, one of the best known engineering faculty. He had worked all over the state in assisting in water resources, pollution control, waste disposal systems. And that has a lot of history too, because of the one area that did deal a lot with the public domain and industry, it was water resources.
Oh yes, that's so many people refer to that,
yeah,
but I haven't.
Danny Mead. You know, Danny Mead was a famous civil engineer on this campus, Daniel Mead. Mm. And his family's still in Madison. His son was the owner of Mead and Hunt Engineering Company. And his son, the grandson, is now editor of Wisconsin Trails Magazine. But none of the family after Harold Mead kept in the engineering. But Danny Mead's laboratory remnants are still down in the Lake Lab. We're trying to get rid of them for the modeling project. That was from the turn of the century.
Just put them in a museum?
They're around 1920. There's internationally, that's those big tanks down there, those cement bins.
Yeah.
That,
yeah.
Those are Danny Mead's honey buckets.
They are?
Sure they are. Yeah. That's left over from Danny Mead. That's 1920. That's how far back our construction program is.
Where are these?
Down on the highway lab, the hydraulics lab on the lake.
Ah.
Next to the Union, that building,
yes,
right on the lake.
The red one, the big,
that's
red,
right.
Yeah.
The basement of that has this, all these old civil engineering structures.
Oh, and where civil engineering, oh, I guess the hydraulics lab. Yeah, yeah.
That is the hydraulics lab.
Yeah, lake water, right. Water supply tanks. Mm.
Sure.
Those are all big concrete tanks in the basement. They're going to be made into rooms eventually. But now there was an example of a lot of state interaction, but mostly with public utilities and water and sewer districts,
mm-hmm,
and things like that. Well, Jerry was a logical choice because he knew everybody. I don't think I've ever known anybody that knew more people in Wisconsin than Jerry Rolick. I mean, everywhere we went, at a luncheon or a reception or wherever I went with Jerry Roll, he knew everybody.
He was a candidate for something, wasn't he? Didn't he run for something?
No, I don't think he... political office? I don't remember that.
I don't remember that.
Maybe
I
not.
Think he might have thought of himself as a candidate to be dean.
Yeah, I think he thought of that.
And it wasn't long after that he didn't get that, but he left for Texas.
Yeah.
He became director of the Lyndon B. Johnson Center for something, Water Resources. He just passed away last week.
Who didn't make him dean?
College.
Oh, I see.
That was when Bob Marshall took over 12 years ago.
From Dean Lynn.
Do you know,
Dean
Lynn. I see. And do you know why they chose Marshall over Roller?
Bob Marshall had been associate dean for research for 20 years?
Something like that.
15 anyway.
Yeah.
And he was sort of the number one candidate that everybody expected.
Well, he had a
distinguished career of his own.
His work in spray drying probably is the classic work in that field.
Yeah.
And that's been very...
And he's won many awards all over the world. Germany, the Chemical Engineering Society gave him their distinguished award. Mm. So he was, Jerry had tough competition.
But are you saying that Jerry Roller would have been more of a go-getter in the state, perhaps? No.
Well, that takes speculation.
Mm.
Here you had two people, Jerry Roller, very distinguished career, local.
Mm.
He knew everybody in the state. He was a civil engineer in Wisconsin. If there was any engineering that was related to the state's industry, it was civil. The others were all more superficial or less. Bob Marshall was a chem engineer with an international reputation.
Mm-hmm.
So his focus was more the country and the world than Wisconsin.
And more perhaps. Academic, perhaps? Would that
perhaps
be?
Perhaps more academic.
I guess, yes.
Jerry might have been more practical.
Because of his relationship with the experiment station, too, I suspect he was more oriented toward research than application.
On the other hand, Bob Marshall did a lot of things to try to stimulate. He started the Industrial Liaison Council for the college. There was never a group of industrialists that came to the college on a regular basis to interact. And Bob Marshall initiated the liaison councils made up of company presidents and vice presidents.
Was this at all related to the UIR?
No, it was quite separate from that. About 4 years ago, I guess it started.
Oh, it's recent.
Yeah, it's very recent.
Mm.
In fact, I think in the last 2 or 3 years of Bob Marshall's tenure as dean, he became more and more interested in communications in the state. Well, a couple of things that he did that probably de-emphasized state relations. Wasn't he did them, but they happened. The dean of the college was, by state law, that the chairman of the registration and licensing board in Wisconsin. That placed this institution in a very special position in state government. And when Bob Marshall became dean, they changed the law. And I think he didn't really care to have the job, so he didn't. There was no, to my knowledge, he didn't oppose it.
I think he was grateful.
Yeah.
Kurt Wendt liked it.
Kurt Wendt liked it. And he saw it, maybe Kurt Wendt saw it as his line to the professional engineers in the state.
Yeah.
And we lost that channel when Bob let that thing die.
Well, that sounds like a severe loss, I should think. I mean, they must have given the college.
It was a lot of work, and it was administrative work. A lot of administrative work. And maybe there was a lot more political work to be done that wasn't recognized as important at the time.
Well, at the time this occurred, I suspect that the college was not concerned a lot about politics of the situation, because the college in the 70s, which
and Bob Marshall became dean in 1970, was not experiencing enrollment increases. It was experiencing enrollment declines. We didn't have serious budget problems that we recognized anyhow.
In the early 70s.
In the early 70s. So we weren't concerned about too many students. In fact, we were concerned about not enough students. So
this college is about a third the size it is today at 72.
Yeah.
Was this one of its 10-year swings, or is it something else, something
more basic? Well, it's more related to the times, because people are recognizing the need that engineers have a greater place in today's economy than they've had in the past.
But was this loss of the licensing? This would be licensing for engineers.
Yeah, it wasn't a loss of it. It was simply that the dean here was no longer, by law, the head of the licensing bureau.
But was somebody else in the college?
No. It was totally divorced from the educational system and as a political appointee.
Yeah, and they make it into the State Department of Regulation and Licensing, and engineering
is just a subset.
Became
like
part of what?
Like county licenses.
Yeah, or cosmeticians or barbers or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. They're all regulated and they're all licensed, and it was all organized under in an efficiency measure under the one individual.
So it wasn't anything. I was thinking of the Wisconsin Bar Association. And
well, in a sense, it had that flavor
earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And we lost that uniqueness, and thereby lost some form of statewide visibility. I'm certain of that.
Hmm.
Because subsequently we saw the creation of engineering colleges in other places around the state without really any logical economic justification for it at all.
And you relate that to this change in
who was in control? All these things happened, and then when the system came along, there was a Council for Higher Education, Commission on Higher Education, an engineering subset of that, and they made a bunch of recommendations, none of which were ever, well, most of which made good sense, but none of which were ever implemented. And then the system came along, and we haven't cooperated since.
Yeah, the difference, wouldn't you say, John, that the difference really is that when the dean was the head of the registration board 45 years ago, then the dean had statewide knowledge of engineering.
Visibility.
And when the dean was no longer a member of the registration board or head of the registration board, this then just became a college.
Right.
And no particular relationship to the state or to the state government.
Right. And the next blow was it wasn't part of them just done that University of Wisconsin.
Yeah.
It was a little pinch of the system.
Yeah.
So we have in the course of 20 years lost what little visibility the College of Engineering had as a unique body.
Was this under Lucy that this happened?
The systemization.
Well, yes, but I mean that the loss of the license.
No, it had to be before that, because that was back 12 years ago.
When was Lucy governor? I forgot.
I thought it was around 72, wasn't it? Or was it later than
that? Yeah, this had to be around 60-something.
I just wondered if it was a political thing.
I think it probably was political. It was in a period, my memory serves me right, it was in a period when the Milwaukee campus was developing engineering. It was in the late 60s.
I don't really remember. What I was thinking, John, is that this is all a part of the state deficiency measures.
Yeah.
And I don't recall, and I recall that part of the efficiency measures was the formation of the system. And I was wondering if you might have come at about the same time. I don't remember.
No, that's just that is the point.
Yeah. I would blame you if he wasn't here on the phone.
No, I was before.
I can tell you. Lucy was governor in 1970.
Yeah.
Knowles was governor in 64. That's so.
It was right in the end of Knowles' period and maybe the start of Lucy's. Either one or the other, or both.
Yeah.
Because they both were actually supportive of the system concept. Knowles had discussed that.
Well, it continued through Kurt. Kurt was still head of the registration board when he retired.
69 or 70?
70, I thought.
Well, then Lucy just became governor.
Yeah.
So Lucy probably did it as part of his efficiency.
It seemed to me it was no doubt started before 70, because I don't think that Bob, he may have been involved in it one year.
Yeah, could have been. But so really the trends were actually counter to any development of a base of communication between engineers and this congressman. Everything that took place up till recently.
Let me put in a comment, make something controversial on the tape. It just occurred to me, so it's not a well thought out opinion. This state has been anti-engineering, period, for at least 10 or 15 years.
I don't know if I'd go so far as to say anti, but not cognizant of the value of technology to the society it's tried to create.
I'll go even farther than that now that I think about it. I'd say this shows you how paranoid one can become.
You've lived through 10 of the years of the 12. I only lived through two.
I'd say the state and the campus have been anti-engineering.
Yeah.
For at least 10 or 15 years.
You say they were before then. Pro-engineering, are you?
I don't know.
Well, let's take a look at the last biennial budget process. The campus has recognized that engineering has grown to about 12% of the campus, and yet we have much less percent of the budget. And our chancellor worked with me, and we made a case for engineering needing to catch up. It wasn't a question of taking over, it was a question of taking a long look and saying, hey, things are not going right down there in the engineering school, and we have to have more faculty. We can't teach engineering subjects in a professional level like we teach econ in lectures of hundreds of students.
Yeah.
TAs just cannot do that. I pick on econ because that was the biggest lecture I ever attended in my school. But and it was a very effective course. It worked.
Who taught it?
He cared for
that. Oh, yeah. You had Wild Bill. Well, you had a...
My relative. Anyway, we can't do that in the same way. We can do things approaching that, but nowhere near. So we were faced with people viewing us as being very expensive. Well, we are expensive. We have special equipment, and a very high percentage of our activities are laboratory oriented. And our curriculum is extremely difficult and requires a lot of attention to the students. Well, we went 10 years of growth without any increase in faculty. In that same 10-year period, our
our relationship, salaries to the Big Ten kept decreasing to the point where, you know, the chancellor said to the Senate, in a few years we'll be at the bottom of the Big Ten. Well, the College of Engineering has been at the bottom of the Big Ten.
Oh, that's way ahead of everybody.
We're way ahead of everybody. And being in the bottom. And we have managed to create a pretty decent environment in a lot of areas and for people to work in good critical masses. And so we have good faculty, regardless of the salary. People consult, and that opportunity has managed to take the place of salary.
But this has been a scientific humanist campus. We've been the guys on the other side of the tracks.
That's right.
And after all, you're just applied, and that doesn't really mean anything. You don't win Nobel Prizes for being applied, and that's what engineering is.
I think that I detect that, and for us to have credibility, we have to really dig hard and do quite a job in order to even come across with some credibility. Every time I do something, I look at with suspicion.
Yeah, I'm sure that, maybe I shouldn't name names.
Mm, you should.
Well, I was thinking that Don can contradict me, and that'll negate everything. But I suspect that Bob Bach doesn't view engineering in the same way that he views microbiology or anything of that nature.
Well, we're trying to change some of these things. We've had very good contacts with the Milwaukee industry in the past couple of years. We're developing a base of communication. Last fall, we initiated what we call our graduate outreach program, which, using videotape instruction, allows practicing engineers around the state to get graduate credit. That will increase our visibility. We've just been very successful in obtaining a major industrial grant for a new degree program.
What industry and what?
$4.3 million from IBM. And that's going to provide computing equipment and money for new course development, money for revitalizing, about $1 million for new lab equipment. So that's going to help us a great deal, because the program is of great interest to industry. I get letters almost every week from people that read about it, company presidents from around the state that are interested in it. We have been talking to Extension about the idea of integration. That's something that's politically a new concept, to bring the Extension back into the academic colleges.
Extension's still going on then?
It's still going on separately.
Mm-hmm.
And this latest Regent resolution that paves the way for the Extension and the Madison campus to integrate could conceivably offer some tremendous new opportunities. Third, I think the greatest thing that's going to help us is the technology itself. I'm of the opinion that our whole concept of higher education has an opportunity to change. It will change. The idea of needing campuses to do similar things at all these locations is an absolutely obsolete concept. It's just a matter of time before technology changes that. For example, it's possible to transmit lectures by satellite from the very most famous person in a given subject to all campuses. Now, it's not economically feasible to do that.
Is anybody doing that?
Yes, there's an experiment with federal money to attempt to do that. The given subject in Colorado. Catalogs of courses on videotapes. We are offering five of our courses are now available on videotape with communication to Madison. They come here to take exams, and that's it. No lectures. we've got students on our campus taking courses with no lectures in the classic sense.
Did you know about that?
Oh, yeah. And the learning curves are identical. Grade points, statistical distribution of student performance. And when you go from semester to semester and just switch technique, and everything remains the same, the results remain the same, it's very encouraging. So,
there's no lecture, but there is a lot of faculty input into the course.
Faculty makes the tapes and sees that the homework's graded. And we do that in engineering. We do a homework grading, which is one of the time-consuming things.
Mm.
There's no substitute for letting the student know they've done it right.
Is that something a TA can do? Or?
Yes.
Mm.
A lot of it. So we're changing a great deal. I can see, you know, looking ahead a decade from now when we could offer the first introductory courses to engineering all on the campuses around the state. And all we do is manage the information system, how the students are doing. And so, you know, the whole concept of a system is going to be different in the next decade.
Is this something that engineers would, in a way, be in charge of, even if it was happening on L&S campus or agriculture, because it would take
the professional
equipment.
People. Yeah, the people that do this are audiovisual people. We don't need to. But we just need the management mechanism. Technology taken care of by technicians. So, and you need the faculty who have the expertise to create the subject matter.
Mm-hmm.
So we would logically become more of a focal point because we have more of these faculty in the broader area than the other campuses. So I think the other campuses are worried about this. I offered our tapes to Milwaukee last spring, and said you could use them for your courses, and we'll just have our students come to your library and look at them and enroll in Madison. They said, keep your tapes off our campus. You know, we can't stop you from doing this, but we don't want to part of you. Their argument was, nobody wants to watch a videotape. They'd rather see a live professor. My point is, I'd much rather see a videotape of the most famous guy in this field than to listen to somebody that's just learning the subject himself teach me something that he doesn't know out. And that's what you get at a lot of campuses.
Saving
if you
a lot
try
of
to do these new things with the same people, you can't do it. So I think technology is going to revolutionize the way we look at at least technical education, because we don't have the base around the state to do it.
Mm-hmm.
We can't afford three engineering colleges in Wisconsin paid for by the taxpayers.
Are there three now? You said
three fairly full-blown ones. There's here in Milwaukee, Platteville, and then there's some engineering programs at other campuses. Like civil engineering, is it up in Stein?
Well, Parkside had a sort of an engineering program for a while.
But that's not really
but that's
a
not,
program.
No. I don't think they've got industrial technology at the top.
It's technology.
Yeah, but not engineering. There's something at River Falls, too.
Maybe that's the silver button.
I think that's right.
So we're going to see a lot of changes take place.
I'd like to get back to your point about a general hostility or to engineering, or at least not paying as much attention, and whether that might have been due merely to not having aggressive enough deans.
I think it was more typical of the profession. You know, engineering started here as railroad engineering. Isn't it? 1884?
I think that's right,
1883.
Then we had mining engineering.
And these were the dirty, practical.
But I mean recently.
Engineering didn't even create PhDs until the 30s.
Yes. We were
100 years behind other basic sciences, and in Europe, it's even more obvious than here.
Hmm.
In Europe, two whole
different university systems emerged because engineering wasn't considered a university subject. So you had the universities in Germany, and you had the Technische Hochschule, which is the technical institutes of technical universities.
That's how MIT started too, isn't
and
it?
MIT is an institute of technology.
Mm.
Okay. And in England, it's even worse. In England, a lot of my engineering one of my engineering friends won't even admit to his mother he's an engineer, never has. He is an applied physicist to her. He has his degree in applied physics, and he's an engineering graduate from London. But, you know, an engineer in English society is very low. As compared to law and medicine and politics, political science.
Well, there's so many...
It's historic. It has very deep-seated historical...
There are so many, quote, engineers, aren't there? They're railway engineers. They ran the... They had the throttle of the engine. They're sanitary engineers.
Exactly. Look at the state barrels. Sanitary engineers.
Yeah.
The garbage collectors. Sanitary engineer in New York City.
Yeah. So
yes, that must be a bit galling to have the word taken over.
Yeah.
So
and until science has found a use for it, we now have genetic engineering.
Yeah.
When genetics ran out of sexy things to talk about, they invented our engineering.
Oh, well, that's a step. That must be a step in the right direction.
So now we may be obtaining respectability and receiving respectability on the other side of the campus because now they found a use for the word.
Right. No, you can joke about it, but there is a lot of historical precedent for the engineering community being not thought of, particularly in academia, in the highest of regard,
or even the college.
It isn't until 1960, well into the 60s, that the majority of faculty in this college had PhDs.
Yes.
Mm. But I have heard it said that both Wendt and Marshall didn't push the engineering college enough, and that was in fact a reason for changing the age, one of the reasons for changing the age limit of retirement. I don't know.
I don't know.
So the implication is
neither of those teams pushed the university in dealing with industry. Kurt Wendt was hands off in industry. You were welcome to go out and do your best. Didn't aggressively pursue it. I remember
it was not his interest.
Wasn't interested. Mm-hmm. It was. I remember asking when I was traveling around on accreditation visits, and I found other universities with industrial consulting boards.
Yeah.
And I said, Dean, why don't we have one here? And he said, well, if you have one, and you hold a meeting and you ask them a question, and they give you an answer, you've got to take their advice. I remember that. Yeah, he didn't want to take anybody to that.
Yeah, he didn't think that we've had some very conservative deans in the sense of not, as you said, not being very aggressive.
Excuse me, let's
change
turn
it over.
Is this battery light supposed to be
if you have one quick kind of question right now, Mrs. Snow, why we could respond, and otherwise another time. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I guess the question I'd like to ask you is if you were, I think better than trying to do the engineering college as such is to do a topic in which the interviews would be in the engineering college, and one would be the whole situation of working with industry, why that didn't happen, how the various departments what they were doing and what they would have done, and
well, another thing is, why did the people that are here come? What was it?
The faculty.
In other words, we have an extremely good faculty today. Yeah, we must have done something right. Now, we're having trouble keeping them.
You don't think it's just the lakes?
No, I don't think it's the lakes. I think it's the environment that this and the environment of opportunity that this university created. Mm.
So that way we'd have to compare it with other universities.
Yeah,
then.
Right. I mean, why did I stay here?
Well, why did you?
Because of the opportunity and the mentorship that went on around here and the collegiality of groups of people.
A lot of people don't understand that Wisconsin is different from other institutions in the form, in its form. Faculty governance really means something here.
My relationship to this college, or not the university, but certainly the college, has been more like a love affair than a job.
I've heard, not in those words, but people certainly do say that.
I found it just marvelous to work here, and I didn't care what I got paid, as long as I had the opportunity to do what I felt was important. And if I needed more money and went out and got it, fine.
We've operated on a sort of a star system. Everybody's been an entrepreneur if he wants to be that. When this college, when this campus loses faculty governance, it really goes
down. It's all done.
It's all over.
We're out of business with our salaries, take away our freedom, impose on our private lives in consulting and outside activities, and you can wrap this place up and forget it. And it'll only take 2 years to do it.
Because you're not going to get good people coming, and you aren't going to get good people staying.
Mm-hmm.
We lost 20 people this year already.
That's what Mr. Washer was saying the other day.
Yeah.
Real despair.
So we rest very heavily on the environment that we create, the opportunities, our willingness to go out and raise money, invest it on behalf of some of the faculty and see them turn around and do something with it. And really, you know, that's what made me come back all the time, was every time I came along with a good idea, Kurt went ahead the money to say, I think that's great, go ahead and do it. I'd do it.
You know, we really should talk more about Kurt Wendt. And
he was a tremendous inspiration for me personally, because he would listen carefully. He would debate it if he doubted it. The minute he believed in it, we could do it. Now, I can't do that today with faculty. I can believe in it, and I can say, I'll help you try to do it. But I haven't got the checkbook to write out like Kurt had.
But those were good times.
Those were good times.
Mm. And that's the reason he had the checkbook, sure.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah.
That made
I
a
have
big
to
difference.
Go out and help the faculty write the proposal to somebody else.
Yeah.
And then we may win a few, like the IBM thing we won.
Yes, all the deans of the 1960s were wonderful because they all had money.
And Bob Marshall was sort of the same with me, not quite as good. Generous, because his interests weren't so much interested down my line. And he was very supportive of young faculty in chemical engineering doing the kind of thing I used to do. But he was always supportive. You know, he had a lot of carryover of Kurt's approach.
Well, we had limited resources even then. But you put your money on what you thought, on who you thought were winners.
That's right. And you had some to put it on.
Yeah, we had some money to put it on.
And
you were one of the winners. Everybody didn't get that kind of support.
Oh, I'm sure that's true.
Yeah.
But I also took the attitude that, you know, just sitting and talking with him, you knew you had to pull it off. I mean, if he expressed the confidence in you and you were able to do it, you had to make it very successful. There was no other way. I mean, he made you feel that way.
This is interesting. I've heard so many different things about Kurt Wendt. I would love to be able to pull a portrait together of him. If people
down
working with him on the campus planning commission, for instance.
Yeah.
And,
he was a very good politician.
Hmm. That's agreed, evidently.
Yeah, he was a very good politician. He was very fair. In fact, he was so fair. If there's any criticism of Kurt Wendt not pushing the college, it was because he didn't want to take unfair advantage in the campus.
Hmm.
That may have hurt us.
Not getting, you mean the engineering research building or the library?
Well, he got the engineering research building. That was that was 13 years ago. That was the last building we had built, short of the library. But he got that building. But he got it not by taking all the $5 million or something, $4 million. $4.5 million from the campus. We went and got the faculty working like hell. And Vince Rideout, I remember he was bugging me, and we wrote proposals for the computer floor. And we really certainly, and we wrote proposals, and we wrote proposals coming out of our ears, and we raised half of that $4.2 million.
Federal.
He was just
federal
like my dad. You know, my dad would let me get anything I wanted when I was a kid, but I had to work like hell.
But that's part of what I mean by engineers being conservative. Now there's some other areas of the campus that I view as big spenders who
just get people convinced that's the thing to do, and the coffers open up for them.
That's right.
Who do you have in mind?
Well, let's not throw daggers.
I have the social sciences more in mind.
Yes, they're very good at getting money.
Yeah.
Well, the argument will be they have no other resource.
I'm very good at spending money.
The argument against, I've come up against recent attitudes that say, well, I heard the president of the Board of Regents at an open meeting suggest that for every dollar those engineers go out and raise, they raise a matching dollar for the humanities. So as things don't get off one side.
Oh, my.
Well,
yes.
That I almost made me fall off the chair.
Yeah.
You know. First, I want 50 cents on the dollar of what they get.
That was what the problem with the physics department. Ingram wouldn't let them hire the people they needed because he wanted to keep the humanities salaries equivalent. And, of course, they couldn't get big physicists if they couldn't pay
before.
More. Yes.
I think that the physical sciences have not been a strong aspect of this campus administration thinking.
They wanted to join you for a while, didn't they, the physics department? Do you know about that? It was after the war. They were quite keen about it.
That would have been great.
This is one of the problems with technology. Now, I don't know. I look at it as maybe a lost opportunity. Others view it the other way around. But in Minnesota, you have the Institute of Science and Technology, which includes all of science and technology, including engineering. Here we have all of the basic sciences, mathematics, physics, chemistry, computer science, statistics, all in health and science. They don't fit.
Yeah.
And the engineering college is sort of an add-on, which tends to make us, as a unit, look more applied and less desirable than if we had in our midst physicists, chemists, mathematicians.
Mm. That's interesting. It was a very strong push, and Harrington, he said, well, when Young is dean, he'll be better to you, because their feeling was they'd be better off in engineering and get more money, but because they couldn't get it under Mark Ingram.
Sure, but they wouldn't let that happen because they didn't want to see the technologies mashed together. They got half of this over in L&S where they can take care of them and control them, and the other half down here where there were no threat.
Divide
their reason.
Divide and conquer.
Well, might have gone the other way.
There we go.
I don't think I ever had any interest in doing anything except going into engineering. I didn't ever want to be a lawyer or a doctor or a musician or anything else like that.
Was your father an engineer?
No. But first of all, I was fascinated with airplanes. And I sort of associated those with engineering, the construction of them. And I was pretty good in the physical sciences, and those sorts of things appealed to me. So so I just sort of thought I'd like to be an engineer. And my father, no, I have nobody else in my family is an engineer, so I have no role models whatsoever, but I just made up my mind myself, and that's why I think that most of the earlier engineers, at least, were school that they wanted to go into engineering.
Yeah.
That's what I thought I wanted to do.
Did you go to college here?
No, I went 2 years to Cole College in Cedar Rapids, which was a small liberal arts school. But I knew I was only going there for 2 years because I didn't want a liberal arts degree. And then I thought I'd transfer to Iowa State. But in between time, there was World War II, and I became an ordnance inspector in industry. So I worked for the Chicago Ordnance District for 4 years in a variety of locations. An inspector is sort of an acceptor. He goes around and makes sure that the product being produced on government contracts is according to specifications. And so I was a resident inspector at a bomb fuse plant and a tail fuse plant, bomb tail fuse, shell fuse plant, a mine, anti-tank mine plant. And then I worked as a roving inspector in other locations.
This is at the age of 21?
Yeah. That was, at the time, it didn't seem so peculiar to me as it does now, but when I was 22 years old, I was a resident inspector in a plant, and we had in the plant 24 government inspectors, and I don't know how many others there were in the company side. It just never occurred to me that that was sort of unusual, but now I think it was. I hate to be, the only thing I remember, about, I remember a lot of things. But one of the things I remember, most of these inspectors in the government payroll were women, obviously, because at that time, and they were chosen to do it, trained to do a specific job. And I had gone to some tourist training school in Chicago. But the thing that I remember is that it seemed to me that half the time one of the women was in the washroom crying. And I got a sort of a different opinion of the problems of supervising women, because they just don't, those women anyhow, didn't respond logically to me. In those days, this is what you did, and that's all there was to it.
Oh, you mean they weren't crying because somebody had been killed in the war, but because somebody didn't...
They were crying because their feelings were hurt.
Yeah. Huh.
And I didn't, in those days, appreciate the problems of people with feeling, that people had feelings. I just figured that you did what you had to do, and that's all there was to it, and there are no personalities involved.
And you had hurt their feelings.
I hurt their feelings, or some of the girls hurt their feelings. So that was, then after the war, I went back to, I went to Iowa State then, and got a bachelor's degree, and I was out for a while and came back, got a graduate degree, but that was sort of accidental. I really
a graduate
never,
degree.
Yeah. I never intended to go into, I never thought I was going to be in the university. But I was looking, I did reasonably well in college, and one of the places where I worked after I got out, their business appeared to be going down. And so I wrote back to the chairman of the department from which I had graduated and asked if he knew of any jobs, because I had a hunch I didn't expect to be released, but I didn't see many opportunities for advancement. And he said, we're looking for someone to teach in a couple of courses. Why don't you come back here and teach? And and I did, and then I was there for a little while, and I thought, well, as long as I'm there, I might as well start taking some graduate courses, and one thing sort of led to another. And I've been in more or less in academia since that time. But I was, but my relations have not really been academic relations principally. I was in the Extension Division, as you know, in charge of their institute program, where we work with people from industry.
So you weren't teaching then?
I taught in some of them. But most of the time, these were programs across many areas, and no one person taught them, but you had to have some degree of expertise to know what ought to be in the program and whom you ought to get to teach.
I have to find out more about the institutes.
Well, engineering institutes, at the time I was in it, they were relatively young. These are 2 to 3 day programs on any sort of subject that would appeal to men working in industry.
I see. So they'd be like the business and management institutes.
It's comparable to the business and management institutes, but instead of business and management courses, we had engineering programs. We had some fairly technical programs in corrosion and in electrical design, mechanical design. We also had sanitary engineering programs and surveyors, industrial engineering programs, time study training, operations research, whatever.
Did you know Benjamin Elliott?
Sure.
He there at the same time?
Ben Elliott was here. That's why I kept recommending him to you.
Uh-huh.
Because while I was in Extension, I started teaching one course in mechanical engineering, an industrial engineering course. And Ben offered me a job in mechanical engineering to come over and teach in mechanical engineering. And so I, at that time, had to decide whether I wanted to stay in Extension or come into the department. In mechanical engineering, and I decided I'd rather stay in Extension because I was having more fun doing that than I thought I would have spending teaching undergraduate students, that sort of thing.
And there wasn't that much difference in salary, I get.
No, it would have been a little more salary, but it wouldn't have made that much difference. And it